This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Diddy jail cell raid? Did he actually demand that others dig up dirt on victims? I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. Thank you for being with us. Breaking news tonight. Diddy went, Can I do this anymore? Did Sean Puffy Combs, a.k.a. Love, a.k.a. Diddy, and on, did he actually order others demanding that they, quote, dig up dirt on alleged victims? This while he is renewing another bail bid? What judge in his or her right mind will grant bond bail on a guy that is demanding others dig up dirt on alleged victims? Not only that, we are getting reports that Sean Combs, a.k.a. Diddy, would, let's just say, ask other inmates to use their phone cards, their phones, their phone time to do three ways, patch him into people trying to dig up dirt on victims, possibly contacting alleged victims himself. What, with bribes or threats? Don't know that yet, but I will find out. Listen to this.
Sean Combs isn't just monitoring social media from behind bars. According to federal prosecutors, Diddy is relentlessly attempting to blackmail potential witnesses. The feds say Combs has been using other MDC inmates' phone access codes to make surreptitious calls. Combs then uses his sons to loop in a third party or directly contacts unauthorized individuals. While the contents of the calls have been redacted in court documents, prosecutors say the conversation clearly outline Combs' intent to silence witnesses.
Ooh, he's in a whole bunch of trouble now. And more.
As part of the interagency contraband sweep at the MDC, agents confiscate 19 pages of notes from Sean Combs' belongings and turn them over to federal prosecutors. Among those notes are inspirational quotes, reminders about family and financial matters that need to be discussed, and a to-do list. That list includes a need to instruct a family member to, quote, find dirt on two potential victims and, quote, find everything on another victim.
Okay, now, according to the defense lawyers for Sean Combs, there were 19 pages of, quote, heartfelt notes to his lawyers. Heartfelt notes, like dig up dirt on Cassie? Notes like that? Joining me, an all-star panel to make sense of what we are learning right now, straight out to Alex West, entertainment reporter with The Mirror. Alex, of course, the defense lawyers are screaming to high heaven, this raid was illegal, it was wrong. But can I get to the dig up dirt on victims part?
Yeah, so these notes range from the to-do list and then the inspirational quotes. However, they also are considered privileged, at least that's what the defense is arguing. Prosecutors, though, of course, are saying the contents are not privileged, especially when we're saying things like inspirational quotes. But they are saying, they're saying it was privileged. They're arguing that that is not something that could have been taken by the prosecutors, the investigators, and yet it was. And the judge is now ruling that those 19 pages have to be destroyed and not used in court.
Eric Faddis joining me, high-profile lawyer, founding partner of Varner Faddis Elite. Faddis, inspirational quotes? Really?
You know, it's a dark scene there in the jail. He's got to keep his spirits up, and there's nothing wrong with him having inspirational quotes. What he's saying is wrong is the authorities coming in, ransacking his entire cell, taking privileged, confidential communications between him and his attorney. That relationship is sacrosanct, Nancy, as you know. And so he's saying that, hey, that's an invasion here, and the prosecution should be punished.
You know, Eric Faddis, you do know that Sean Combs has been denied bail twice so far or more because of prior threats on alleged victims. So you're telling me that his inspirational quotes including demands that others dig up dirt on alleged victims. With his track record, I mean, Fattis, when you don't know a horse, look at his track record. We know he has already allegedly threatened other witnesses, possibly bribed them. And now he's making up to-do lists, not just for his lawyers, but for family and friends to, quote, get dirt on victims to intimidate them. You know how many rape victims I've had that don't want to take the stand? They get on the stand and completely shut down because of things just like Sean Combs is doing right now, and you want me to come down on the prosecutors? What world are you living in, man?
Well, the world that the judge lives in, because he's already come down on the prosecution on this. Look, witness intimidation, witness tampering is completely impermissible. That being said, defense has a right to investigate their case, to look into the backgrounds of the accusers, see if they've made a false statement, have they filed a fallacious case, have they engaged in a crime of dishonesty. These are appropriate measures for defense to take, so long as they are not going past the line which separates investigation from witness tampering. That, of course, is impermissible.
Oh, yes, that's impermissible. But let's put this 3 inches up the prosecution's tailpipe because they happen to find the list. Straight out to Dr. Dwayne Hendricks, former associate warden at this CI, Correctional Institution, MDC in Brooklyn, former senior warden, U.S. Department of Justice, Federal Bureau of Prisons, founder of A New Daylight Foundation and author of Who Are You? See It, Say It, Seize It. Dr. Hendricks, isn't it true that in a CI, Correctional Institute, there are routine sweeps in inmates' cells and you find all sorts of stuff? You find shanks, you find Pruno, homemade wine, you find phones, you find guns, you find drugs. Isn't that true, Dr. Hendricks?
Yes, that is true. And staff are charged with doing at least 5 to 10 cell searches on a daily basis per shift. And typically, inmates will put their legal material, they will separate their legal material from other material that they may have in their cell. Now, I can tell you where he's being housed right now. It's in a dormitory-style unit on the east building of MDC Brooklyn. So it's bunk style and it's open. So there are several bunks on each in the area that he's staying in. So typically, those inmates will keep their belongings under their mattress. And apparently, he's not separating his legal work from these other material, these inspirational notes and different things of that nature.
Why do you keep saying inspirational notes? Inspirational notes like dig up dirt on the victims?
Well, that's where the issue comes in. That's not legal work. If he's saying, dig up dirt or call this person or call that person, that is not legal work. And I would guarantee that they didn't go specifically to his particular bunk to find anything unless there was some information that came out of these alleged three-way calls where he was using other inmates' PAC numbers. And basically, because it's voice recognized, so the inmates would have to
try to... What is a PAC number?
A PAC number is a number assigned to each inmate when they come into the prison. And when they set it up, and it's voice recognized. So if someone's there, they'd have to dial a number and then they'd have to say their name and then it would link up with that PAC number that's assigned to that person. Then they would call a contact that's on their approved list. And then once that person got on the phone with them, then they would ask the individual on the line to say, hey, now dial this number for make a three-way call with this number. And then I will hand the phone over to whoever's trying to make the illegal three-way call. And apparently he did that.
Dr. Hendricks, let me ask you a question. Isn't it a violation of jail policy to use other people's PACs?
Yes. And he probably lost his phone privileges once they found out that he was using these other inmates' PAC numbers to make these three-way calls. And obviously he needs to understand they're monitoring all those inmates' calls in his unit because he's now that they did a threat assessment and put him in a general population unit, he's more likely housed with other individuals that's probably charged with sex offenses or former law enforcement officers four pending charges.
To Dr. Bethany Marshall, joining us, renowned psychoanalyst out of L.A., author of Deal Breaker. You can see her now on Peacock or find her at drbethanymarshall.com. Dr. Bethany Marshall, second verse, same as the first. The rules don't apply to Diddy, do they? They didn't out here in civilian land, and they don't behind bars. He's using other inmates' packs to use their phone access. He is directing other people, demanding that they dig up dirt on victims. You know how hard it is to get a rape victim to testify in front of a packed courtroom, to be the subject of derision, to be attacked on cross-examination about their motives for coming forward. Look how long Cassie Ventura kept it secret that she was beaten and raped, according to her, by Combs. And now he's doing it again behind bars. And who's getting it up the rear end? The prosecutors.
That's right, Nancy. Two things stand out to me. One of the things is that probably his children were on the approved caller list. And allegedly, he is instructing one of his children to get in touch with a victim and get dirt on them. So think about that, using your own children allegedly to commit a crime. The other is that victims are extraordinarily ashamed because on some level, they were there and they participated unwillingly, and that unwilling participation becomes confused with willing, and then they really want to hide. They feel that they're going to be cut off from society.
You know, let me ask you this, Fattis. You were a prosecutor at one time. You ever seen a shank?
In photos, yeah.
Oh, in photos. Chris McDonough joining me, former homicide detective, former vice detective, director of Cold Case Foundation. I found him on the interview room on YouTube. Have you ever seen a shank?
Absolutely. I've seen one made out of a toothbrush where they grind down, you know, the end of the toothbrush and they make a spear. So absolutely, you can make a shank out of just about anything you can get your hands on.
Let's see the MDC Brooklyn amenities, indoor-outdoor facilities for games and sports, cable TV, movie nights on weekends. Nobody's giving me a movie night. Does that come with popcorn and soda? In the last hours, we learn about a jail cell raid on Diddy's new digs at MDC. He's already been transferred to a better location in a dorm-style setting. But now we learn that raid found about 20 pages of, quote, heartfelt notes to his lawyer, including demands that dirt be dug up on the alleged victims. Again, when you don't know a horse, look at his track record. Listen.
Jamal Shine Barrow says he wanted nothing to do with Diddy after his conviction for the Club NY shooting that Barrow says Combs committed. Barrow says the singular time Combs came to visit him, he tried to spit in Combs' face. After serving 10 years, Combs convinces Barrow to meet and gives him $50,000 as restitution for taking the fall. Barrow says $5,000 per year served felt like a slap in the face when compared to the $500,000 shopping sprees he treated Cassie to.
He probably gave me like 50 racks, and I'm like, you know, you can't be serious. Like, that's 10 years, 50 racks.
That's Jamal Shine at Barrow speaking to our friends at The Breakfast Club. So I already know, according to him, Barrow, that Combs will pay off a witness. The last thing Combs wants is that event, that shooting, to be reopened. And he, Combs, have to go to jail for it. We know, isn't it true, straight out to Alex West, that Cassie Ventura did not comment or call police or report the beatings and alleged rapes on her. It didn't come to the consciousness of the public until the video of Combs beating her openly, chasing her down, kicking her. Until that came out publicly, nobody knew what had happened. He kept her quiet.
Yeah, she remained quiet. She did not go to police. And that's the same for most of the alleged victims. They did not come forward until it was this time to file the lawsuits. After Cassie's lawsuit, plenty more came forward, but they did not previously speak about it, including some of the children. There was a child who claims to have auditioned for him, and he was instructed to keep it from his parents. And eventually he did say that he came and spoke with them, but he was scared. He kept quiet for a long time. And when the video of Cassie came out, that's when the general public knew, because she settled with him within a day originally. And then the video came out and the public, you know, was able to physically see that. And he even took responsibility, but not until the video came out.
I guarantee you, Sean Combs' defense will ask the judge to have all of the sex trafficking charges thrown out based on prosecutorial misconduct, alleged prosecutorial misconduct. During a jail cell raid, many pages of handwritten notes were found in Sean Combs' jail cell, including directions, demands that others dig up dirt on victims. That and more. Prosecutorial misconduct claims, usually unfounded, give a black eye to the prosecution. And I guarantee you there will be a demand this case be thrown out based on the raid. But what do prosecutors say? Listen.
Prosecutors argued there has been no wrongdoing, as the notes went to a filter team to confirm they did not contain privileged information before prosecutors ever laid eyes on them. Federal agent Mary Slavik says her team acted in a completely appropriate fashion in regard to the 19 pages of documents.
Alex West joining us from The Mirror. I'm not sure that the prosecutors realized a raid was being done, conducted on Combs' jail cell.
You know, that's the thing, is the defense are claiming that the U.S. Attorney's Office, prosecutors, the investigators, and those within the prison were working together. We don't know for sure. Obviously, those conversations are happening in courts and they're making different claims. However, the raid did happen. They did write that in their court documents, saying that the raid, the prison, that's how they found out this information, both the calls and also the personal notes. And then the defense hit back immediately. And, you know, they say they use the filter team and the judge is aware of that. And they still said they need to throw these documents out.
To Dr. Dwayne Hendricks, who was associate warden at MDC, when routine raids are done on jail cells, do the prosecutors downtown in the courthouse know that raids are happening?
No, not in a specific thing where this raid happened, where the whole jail was being searched for weapons and hard contraband. However, there had to be, because the MDC has their own legal counsel, a legal counsel team on site. And I've never seen where there's photos of notes taken from a cell search unless there were specific instructions to find something specific. So my assumption is something came out of those phone calls that were recorded when he was trying to use the three-way calls. And maybe they were looking for something specific when they did go look at his belongings. That would be my estimation, because otherwise I don't see why the legal counsel within the institution or within the Bureau of Prisons would be having these kind of conversations with the prosecution team unless there were some specific information that they were looking for based on the phone calls that were made allegedly by Mr. Combs while he was using those other inmates' PAC numbers.
Dr. Hendricks, I think you're right. I think something originated in those phone calls, which everybody knows, everybody and their old aunt know they're recorded. Well, the judge in this case is taking it very seriously, even demanding an emergency hearing. Listen.
Judge Subramanian calls an emergency hearing on the matter, talking Combs' defense team down from a ledge. Shockingly, Combs appears for the hearing unshackled, a freedom granted for all future court appearances. Combs seems more at ease, hugs his attorneys, and surveys the courtroom to see who is in attendance. Judge Subramanian rules that the notes will not be allowed into evidence, and prosecutors must destroy any and all copies of the documents.
Dr. Hendricks, I want to understand from you if this makes sense. Okay? It makes sense to me, but you were the one embedded in MDC. Now, agencies involved in the sweep at your old CI, MDC, insist this sweep was planned prior to Sean Combs' detention and did not target any specific inmate. Now, we've heard from the beginning, since Combs first went there, that there was a sweep plan, that there were measures being taken to find drugs and contraband. to inspect conditions there. We've been hearing that since day one. Well, it happened. So how is that targeting him?
It is. And I think it was just coincidental in terms of the timing, because they have done other sweeps of other federal correctional complexes across the country over the last several months. And I think it just coincided with him being taken out of solitary confinement or in a special unit and being placed in general population. And then him allegedly starting to make these calls and different things of that nature. So maybe the sweep was maybe it was already pre-planned, but it maybe got pushed up a little bit earlier based on the information that the staff were passing on to the Southern District of New York's prosecution team. But that is, again, I will just say there had to be something specific that they were looking for in terms of taking pictures of notes based on these alleged calls, especially when you're talking about eight different inmates. It's one thing to have one inmate to use, have to try to make a three-way call, but you're talking about eight different inmates. So he was trying very hard, allegedly very hard, to try to get this information out so he can do what he needs to do, or he feels like he needs to do, to put himself in a better position to be found not guilty on these charges.
Prosecutors allege that the bittersweet video of Sean Diddy Combs' children celebrating his birthday without him is really a carefully curated PR stunt to improve potential jurors' opinion of him. In court documents, prosecutors claim Combs explicitly told family members how to ensure the video produced the desired effect and instructed all of his children to post the video to their own social media accounts.
Wow. Imagine that, using his own children as a PR stunt. Joining me from the Mirror, Alex West. What?
Yeah, so I remember seeing the posts come up, and those of us in the newsroom were shocked. We said, is this Diddy posting somehow from jail? Is he using his kids to friend his social media? But what we do know is he's in contact with them, right? He's in touch with them. They are coming to the courtroom. We're watching them come to his appearances together, including his mother. So he's in close contact with his family. I can't say whether or not he's using them. That's a question for the law. But I do know he's close with his family, even going through these legal proceedings.
Okay, just hold on just a moment. You don't see any connection here? Dr. Bethany Marshall, please. They do a sweep of his jail cell, which they've been talking about for months, that they're going to investigate MDC about its conditions, and they're going to do sweeps of jail cells. Well, they did it. After they do it, now allegations are emerging that this, you know what, let me show it to you, that this birthday wish and showing his children, asking him to stay strong and so forth and so on, was just a big stunt. I wonder if that was discovered from the documents and the demand, the to-do list found in his jail cell. Watch this, Bethany.
Say hey, Jay.
Say happy birthday to mommy.
We love you.
Chance is right here, too, if you can hear on the phone. One more time.
Okay, Dr. Bethany, that's from Diddy's son's official Instagram. That's at PrinceJ-D-C. What about it, Bethany? Imagine Sean Combs using somebody.
Right. Hard to believe, right? You know, this might be hard to believe, but some families actually organize themselves like cults, with the dad, the person being at the top, being almost like a cult leader, where all benefits flow upwards to the parent. You know, in normal families, most of the benefits flow to the children, right? We think about our children. We want to love and nurture them. In these cult-like families, it's in the reverse. And these alleged crimes really do mirror a cult, a sex cult, where the leader imagines themselves to be spiritually authoritative, you know, all these inspirational quotes and calling himself love. So I try to think about the family that way.
Did you just say inspirational quotes? Just what, did you drink the Kool-Aid? Inspirational quotes, my rear end. Those 19 pages is all about find dirt on Cassie, find dirt on this one and on that one, do this, do that. That's what the inspirational and heartfelt meanderings were. They're not just, you know what, I can't hear you right now. Watch this, Bethany.
Y'all, it's King Combs, and right now I'm taking over my pop's Instagram. We're going to be posting videos by spreading, you know, good energy and taking y'all down memory lane, all the positive things he did. So stay tuned and watch this. Let's go. We love you, Pops. Happy birthday.
That's from Diddy's official Insta page. You know what? Let me go out to Shannon Henry joining us, in addition to Dr. Bethany Marshall and Alex West. Shannon Henry is president and founder of SASSGO, S-A-S-S, Surviving Assault, Standing Strong. It's a nonprofit whose mission is to stop trafficking and violence on women. Okay, just pause for a moment, Shannon Henry. Did you see where the sun is trying to, quote, spread good energy and taking us all down memory lane with all the positive things Sean Combs did? It's hard for me to even look at any of those positive things, knowing that the weekend before he had a freak off where women claimed they were drugged and raped.
I was chomping at the bit to get in here and speak to this, so I'm glad you came to me. Nancy, this is the abuser's playbook on steroids, and he's doing it through his children and other people in the prison system. He's even convinced a jury to, or people to say, hey, let him be unshackled when he comes into this courtroom so that there's no bias against him, which amazes me because that road runs both ways. They could also presume that he's innocent because he's not in shackles. So he continues to rob people. He exploits individuals all the time, and he's in control, again, from prison. It's amazing.
You ever wake up one morning covered in baby oil with your rear end hurting, Ritter?
I have not. No, I cannot say that I've experienced that, but...
Well, lucky you. I guess you didn't go to a white party. That's what this is about. It's not really about the jail cell sweep. It's not about Sean Combs using multiple other inmates' PAC numbers to conduct three-way phone calls, to orchestrate digging up dirt on victims. It's about what happened to the alleged victims. We can make jokes about it. We can make light of it when it gets too much to think about. But this is what it is, women and men claiming they were drugged at these so-called white parties and these so-called freak-offs, waking up realizing that they had been raped, only later to learn, according to them, that the whole thing was caught on video, them naked, their private parts, the acts done upon them without their knowledge. That's what we're talking about. Let me just bring it home. Rape victims go the rest of their lives suffering. They have flashbacks. It affects the way they live from that point forward. Some of them never get over it. That's what we're talking about. But in the news now is Combs's home, his mansion. Listen.
This house is amazing. Great architecture. The guest quarters, I don't know, not big enough for guests with like security staff or personal staff, but everything else really checks every single box. This house is listed for $61.5 million. My target is $30 million. Investors stay away from houses like this, the Kanye West house, the P. Diddy house, but this is our target. We take the house, we renew it, we restore it, but we also change the persona and the stigma. We make sure this house is number one.
That is from at Bellwood B.O. talking about the great architecture. The house is amazing. It's listed for $61.5 million, but ruh-roh, there may be a problem.
And here's the problem, Nancy. Jason Haidt, property manager of a Las Vegas rental, says Combs made odd requests that now can only be described as chilling. Combs rented a Las Vegas mansion to host a birthday party for Meek Mills in 2014. Haidt says Combs insisted that all bedroom doors be equipped with double-sided locks and that he be provided the only keys. Haidt says the home was left a disaster, the bedrooms in particular left in squalor. He found used condoms and smears of lubricant on countertops and floors, cocaine and half-empty liquor bottles everywhere, and the bedding in several rooms was bloodstained.
I may need to hear that again. Alex West joining me, entertainment reporter with The Mirror. Let me understand. I've got this flashy real estate guy in front of Sean Combs' mansion talking about, let's see, what were his exact words? Man, this house is amazing. And then I've got a property manager stating that used condoms, smears of lubricant on countertops and floors, cocaine, half-empty liquor bottles with blood-stained bedding in several of the rooms. Did you know that, Alex?
You know, we've been seeing reports about that from hotels. The prosecutors say that this is kind of similar to what was happening in these hotels where they were given different supplies for freak-offs, and that's including new bedding, fresh bedding. And now, you know, they're saying in these houses, there was blood on the sheets. So it really does seem similar to what was occurring in these alleged incidents at these hotels. We do know while this house might be grand, that stigma isn't going to easily go away when we know that these events were supposedly happening. We know that these giant parties were happening. And now they're saying, allegedly, that they were in disarray, in gross conditions, including blood, and so many other different things, right? So it's weird. The idea of trying to change the stigma is very strange.
To Shannon Henry joining us, president founder of Surviving Assault Standing Strong. Lubricant on countertops and floors. Cocaine, half-empty liquor bottles. Bloodstains in multiple bedrooms on the sheets and the covers. That doesn't sound like a party to me. It sounds like a crime scene.
It is a crime scene, Nancy. And what's amazing to me is that you have these people that have been invited to something that seemed lavish and sexy, but what you find is that it was really and truly humiliation rituals going on behind the doors of these homes and hotels, and Combs was at the top of all of it.
What about it, Dr. Bethany? A party? It doesn't sound like any party I've ever been to.
Never. Nancy, this is consistent with luring victims with some kind of a promise, just like giving a child candy or saying, I have a puppy dog around the corner. Although this is probably Cristal and Camus and caviar and all of that, so that the victims really are made to believe that they're going to have a special experience. But these alleged crimes are more consistent with a rape machine. Almost like a killing machine when someone goes on a spree. This would be consistent with a rape scene. And also, Nancy, those floor-to-ceiling mirrors we talked about in another show, this would be consistent with a perpetrator who is so controlling that they want to see everything that's going on from every angle so that nobody is doing anything that the perpetrator does not want them to do.
Bethany, I know you're a high-profile psychoanalyst joining us out of Beverly Hills. You're on Peacock. You're famous. You've written books. Have you ever been in a cow pasture and seen those little bugs flying around? How can I say this? The cow poop?
Right.
Big patties of cow poop. You ever seen that?
I certainly have.
Okay. Those little flies flying around, cow crap, it stinks to high heaven.
Mm.
I want to see that video again.
This house is amazing, great architecture. The guest quarters, I don't know, not big enough for guests with like security staff or personal staff, but everything else really checks every single box. This house is listed for $61.5 million. My target is $30 million. Investors stay away from houses like this, the Kanye West house, the P. Diddy house, but this is our target. We take the house, we renew it, we restore it, but we also change the persona and the stigma. We make sure this house is number one.
I don't know why he's calling this a mansion worth $61 million because it looks like a steaming pile of cow crap to me. And whoever's buzzing around it, that's on them. That is from at Bellwood B.O. And you know what? Diddy needs that house to sell because trust me, he's going to need that money for his defense.
While Tony Busby filed 5 new lawsuits against Sean Combs, an anonymous celeb filed a suit against him. The John Doe accuses Busby of extortion after receiving a demand letter from his firm offering the chance to settle outside of court before making the allegations public. While the celebrity claims Busby demanded an exorbitant amount of money at the threat of publishing fabricated instances of sexual assault, Busby says the standard demand letters do not contain any sums whatsoever, but the allegations are very real.
Okay, so the lawyer, Tony Busby, representing, remember, he was the one that came out with the 800 number for all of the alleged victims of Sean Diddy Combs to call and join in a lawsuit against Combs, a civil lawsuit. Now he is getting sued. Alex West, in a nutshell, what's that all about?
Yeah, so this is an extortion case. They're accusing him of extortion. They're saying that the that he was sent a demand letter, and this high-profile individual, as he's describing himself, says that he's not going to back down from this and that he wants the court to stop it in its tracks and that he feels it's wrong. Of course, he's remaining anonymous, right? So we don't know much more about beyond that. We also do know that there is a second lawsuit filed against Busby too, which alleges him of unethical practices, and it alleges abuse from Busby.
I wonder if that could have been on Diddy's to-do list that they just found in his jail cell. Destroy Tony Busby. We'll see.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
To Eric Faddis, joining us, high-profile lawyer, former prosecutor, partner at Varner Faddis Elite Legal. Demand letters happen every day. They happen in, typically, civil lawsuits. You're going to sue somebody, you send them a demand letter, and you say, hey, stop doing XYZ and pay me ABC, or else I'm filing a lawsuit. That happens every day.
See, that's commonplace. I think this extortion case against Tony Busby doesn't have a lot of merit. Extortion is where a person says, hey, give me money or I'm going to do something unlawful to you, like break your kneecaps. That's not what Tony Busby is doing. He is engaging in normal civil practice, sending these demand letters. There's nothing unlawful from what I can see. I think this is just a prominent person trying to get in front of this sort of bad PR tsunami that could be coming their way.
So let me understand, Alex West, the person that's now suing civil attorney Tony Busby, I guess, is a celeb that has been accused of what? Being at a freak off or a white party, taking part in attacks on victims. I'm just trying to figure out, why would Tony Busby send that person, the anonymous person suing Tony Busby, why would Busby send him a demand letter and sue him to start with?
Yeah, that's the thing about the case, is this high profile individual has been pretty vague. They don't specify what they are being accused of, really, other than being involved in some sort of allegations involving Diddy. And the thing about the Diddy case, right, is there is a lot of things in a lot of context that he's been accused in. He does not, this high profile man does not specify which part. He's trying to stay as vague as possible as this conversation continues.
Isn't it true, Alex West, that cases have been and could be dropped because accusers will not allow their name to be made public?
I mean, absolutely. It's a thing that's happened in the past, especially when they feel it's important to the story and to the allegations.
Joining us, Chris McDonough, Director, Cold Case Foundation, former homicide, former vice. Chris McDonough, I'm wondering how much of this information we're just getting is coming out of what was found in Sean Combs's jail cell.
You know, Nancy, here's some inspiration for his notebook. This is an ongoing investigation, i.e. there are multiple tracks now with two trains on them, one civil and one criminal. They are monitoring everything inbound, outbound from that jail cell where P. Diddy is sitting. And you can bet that the feds, because this has, you know, a lot of legs on it going across to California, et cetera, they are sitting somewhere with a T3, meaning they're sitting there monitoring everything going in every direction. So he's going to have to sell the house with the orgy room and all the other stuff that comes along with it.
From what we understand, a list of alleged victims and sex workers are lining up to testify against Combs.
Federal prosecutors are continuing their investigation into Sean Diddy Combs freak-offs, and several male escorts are reportedly lining up for the opportunity to share their horrific experiences. Several former sex workers allege they were given strict expectations before being hired for a freak-off and required to take Viagra or Cialis before the event. If performers failed to meet the standards, they would be removed from the party without compensation and blacklisted.
And Eric Faddis, yes, they're sex workers, and the defense will try to attack them on credibility. But think about it, Faddis. They may be sex workers, but according to documents, proof, and eyewitnesses, Sean Combs is the one hiring them and flying them to his parties.
Exactly right, Nancy. And I think our culture has evolved a little bit in terms of how we see sex workers, the emergence of OnlyFans, there's just more allowances given for that line of work. And so I'm not sure that stigma should be applied to these folks. And I bet in New York, once the case comes to trial, there'll be less of a stigma on that type of profession as compared to something else.
I mean, what I'm saying, Faddis, is if Sean Combs' lawyers try to cross-examine sex workers on their testimony regarding what happened at Freakoffs and White Parties, it's going to turn right back around on him. He's the one that allegedly hired them. He's the one that allegedly brought them into his parties. So who is Sean Combs hanging around with? Nuns and priests and virgins? H-E-L-L-N-O, sex workers, brought in for a freak-off that can only boomerang and hit him in the neck.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, according to the evidence, it looks like Combs is the ringleader here. He's the orchestrator of all of this. And so can he really go and talk out of two sides of his mouth and say, oh, don't believe these sex workers, but yet I trusted them enough to hire them and have them work at these parties? I'm just not sure that argument's going to fly.
We wait as justice unfolds and the investigation goes on. Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.